Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Wednesday, January 21st, 2026 to everybody. This is Chase with you again from the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. And we have our favorite special guest, Ryan Karchi of the LA Times, is back to join us. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us once again.
I bet you say that's all your guests.
only some of those words.
Thanks for having me, though. Good to be back.
So, you know, there's a lot going on. College football season just ended. We're in the midst of the college basketball season. A lot going on, and you're, you know, firmly entrenched in what's going on with USC, everything. We're a basketball podcast, so I thought we'd start with that. It's been a very kind of odd year for the basketball team. The results have been good, I think, overall, but there have been, you know, just from a personnel standpoint, I can't remember a team being quite this injured this far into the season. So the guy that I think everyone acknowledges SC spent the most money for, Ronnie Rice, got injured in Maui. Amarion Dickerson, who is kind of the sixth man and kind of in the role of starter while Elijah Arenas has been out, he got injured in Eugene. We've had this kind of crazy performance by Chad Baker Mazzara, somewhat of emergence of Gabe Dines recently, but otherwise kind of unclear. We had to bring him a player in midseason because of the personnel losses. And now tonight, the long-awaited debut of Elijah Arenas is supposed to happen against Northwestern at the Galen Center. So I guess, you know, what is your sense being around the program to the extent you are and the conversations you've had, just the frustration maybe the staff has had with the all these injuries and maybe now also considering how some of the recent last couple performances have been decent, pretty good, that hey, we're, you know, if only we had the roster we thought we were going to have, this could have been a really something.
You know, that's really been the case each of the last 2 years. They haven't operated under any other circumstances other than this horrible injury luck. But yeah, I think, it's been a source of frustration for sure, because I think, you know, ultimately this, you could see it just in initial glimpses of this team that there really was a lot of potential there. And that was without seeing what Elijah Arenas could do. And I think, you know, just losing Rodney Rice, especially that was where you felt a lot of sort of doom and gloom around the team, not just, you know, within the team, but, you know, just kind of understanding how that group was starting to operate together. I think that was a tough hit to overcome. But, you know, since then, they really did. And I think what has been most interesting to me is, you know, what they do when Chad Baker Mazzara hasn't, you know, isn't having one of his good nights, or, you know, isn't in the best spot, you know, just in general in terms of his health or whatnot. But, you know, they've kind of made it work. And I can't really quite explain how it's worked for you, because it feels like it's a different way that it's worked on a night by night basis. And I think that's probably a credit to Eric Musselman and his staff, just for adjusting to that. But when your guards, you know, that you're starting on a given night are, you know, Ryan Cornish and Cam Woods, who you didn't have at the beginning of the season, that's kind of a sign of how awry things have gone, and you're still 14-4. So not bad considering the circumstances.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the last game when we were playing Purdue, and we didn't have Jerry Easter either. Now, Jerry, it's interesting. Jerry, I think, has actually performed pretty well. He looks pretty good when he's out there. But, He's we talked about this on our last podcast, and his advanced metrics are really weird. Like, he doesn't seem to be meshing with a lot of the players until that performance against Maryland, where he was great. I mean, he's been very good in a lot of the performances, but he really sparked us against Maryland, and then he gets sick. So, I mean, Jerry's like a legit high major basketball player, right? He's like other guys were he's a top 40 recruit. Other major programs were recruiting him. You take him off the roster, and now it's like, how many of the guys left on this team are true high major guys? I mean, Kofi and Azar, I think, are obviously Chad Baker and Azar at this point.
Sure.
But yeah, when you're starting Cam Woods and Ryan Cornish, and even when you're bringing in Jordan Marsh to an extent, I mean, the guy's like 5'9". He's like, are these bona fide high major players? It's, I mean, they certainly, Jordan Marsh went to town against Maryland, but you put him out there against Purdue and he wasn't into shots, and that is like, oh gosh, is this just a mid-major guy who can't hit his shots? Those are and he couldn't really guard he really struggled guarding Braden Smith. We had to bring Cam Woods back in, which is funny because Cam Woods can't shoot either. So you're like, gosh, is this, are these guys really high major guys? I mean, they seem like they'd be perfect guys if you just needed to, you needed to have guys come off the bench and support your team. And, but to rely on them is like kind of key players. Like, we had Jane Brunell in there and key moments at the end of that game. He had the turnover, unfortunately. And you're like, gosh, are these guys truly, are they truly high major players? Or are we just kind of, holding things together with paper mache?
It's not possible really for USC especially to build a basketball team that's going to go 11 deep with guys who can keep the train moving. So I think it's like ultimately you can't even contend with the injuries in that sense. I think what they've just being able to do what they've done so far is about as good as it could have gone. And I think the Purdue game was especially interesting, though, just given how they looked. And I think a lot of that has to do with this team, in order to operate at its ceiling right now. Now we don't know how to look with Elijah Arenas, but you really need Chad Baker Mazzara firing on all cylinders, and he's just been so inconsistent. And there's been a lot of allusions just by the staff, even Muss in press conferences has kind of suggested, like, about practice and being available. And you can just sense the instability there on a night by night basis. And I think when you're relying on so many different variables of guys kind of hitting their ceiling on a night by night basis, like, that's a dangerous strategy to rely on. So you desperately need someone like Elijah Arenas who can give you 20 a night if you need it. And now, how that's going to look right away, I'm fascinated to see tonight. I think there's going to be a couple of games of just trying to figure out what this team looks like now, which I feel like they've had those stretches like four times this year already. But I think we're going to see a very consequential stretch coming up that's really going to determine kind of what this team's identity is.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. So, what is your prediction for tonight? As far as, do you think Arenas starts? How many minutes do you think he plays? And do you think when he's in there that he's going to be kind of slotted as the point guard, or is he kind of going to be slotted, with Cam Woods? Like, Cam Woods will take care of, kind of the majority of the ball handling, and then maybe, Elijah will be given the opportunity to kind of, in sets, kind of be the dominant ball handler in particular sets. What's your kind of feeling on all those things?
My read is that they were especially careful in bringing him back because they wanted him to be closer to 100% and confident. So I would imagine that they are going to sort of throw him right into the mix. And I know Muss had talked about sort of initially limiting his minutes. Now, I don't know how much that will be the case. Like, I would expect him to play like 20-ish minutes in these first couple games back. But I would imagine that in those 20 minutes, like, they don't really have time to waste in terms of bringing him up to speed. The reason you hold him out this long is to do this quickly. So this is such a key stretch. I feel like you kind of have to see what you have with him in terms of especially being a ball handler. So I think we're going to see a lot from him right away. And what I'm curious about is like how does the rest of the team fit around that? What does that mean for Chad Baker-Mazzara? Does he become a little less interested on a night by night basis? What does it mean for Ezra or Kofi? Either of them, I could imagine their roles changing pretty significantly with the threat of Arenas kind of as someone who can drive to the hoop or shoot from the mid-range or through 3-point range. So it's going to be fascinating. I'm really excited to see it tonight.
Are you getting a sense of like what their expectation is of him? Not necessarily in that first couple games, but as we continue down the road, because you certainly, coming into the season, obviously, I think he was projected by most people to be, this is pre-injury, that he'd be like a top 10 draft pick. Now, I just looked, the Athletic released their top 100 prospects, and they didn't put him include him on the list. Now, obviously, that's because of the injury. But there is somewhat of a lost time aspect to that. Guys have certainly been drafted who've played less than Arenas will have played this season, assuming he plays the rest of the season. Do you think the coaches are thinking, hey, we kind of are hoping that he's going to play at a lottery pick level the rest of the season? Or are they kind of like, well, that's maybe a little much to ask of a guy coming off this injury who didn't have the full preseason? Maybe we're just expecting a guy that can play some really solid minutes and give us some scoring from the outside, which we're really desperate for these days.
I don't know that I have a great sense of those expectations, but I do know that, they have a very high opinion of Elijah, and I think that, I think they're definitely expecting that he will be the guy coming in right now, if only because they don't have anyone else that they can rely on, like they can rely on him. So, I really do think that, also. His camp, I'm sure, obviously he was kind of on the fence about and had said it himself about whether he wanted to come back or not for the rest of this season. And he decided to come back. And I don't know that he would do that if not to be highlighted as the centerpiece of this offense. And I think that's what we're going to see. And, now that said, if it's not working, I don't know that. Musselman and his staff would be sort of left to only rely on him and sort of go down with that ship. But I expect that we'll see him be a a centerpiece of the plans going forward for sure.
Have you heard it from his camp or anybody else? It's kind of like this, all the new what we're seeing now with Bediako trying to get eligible for Alabama. I guess the only early, because of the change with NIL last year, the only early entrant to the draft from American player was RJ Lewis from St. John's that went undrafted. Every other one was drafted, I think, by the 40th pick. He was the only one who went undrafted. He apparently is now showing interest in trying to come back and play college basketball again because he wasn't drafted. Is there any sense that you've gotten that like maybe some of these guys would be thinking, hey, I can try out, try this, I'll dip into the NBA draft, and then if I don't like where I'm at, just don't sign a contract and maybe try to come back to college? Have you heard any hint of that?
I haven't, but at least in from Elijah's perspective, but I would not. I mean, the plan has always been for him to play 1 year and to go into the draft. And I think, that is still where everyone's head is at. But that said, I wouldn't doubt that he could do something like that. I mean, I think we'll probably see that become more normalized going forward, but there are so many options kind of available to him. He could just enter the transfer portal too and declare for the draft and just keep have all of his options open. Maybe that means he comes back to USC. I have no doubt that they would welcome him back because the staff just feels so highly about his potential, and I do think that would make next year's team certainly a lot more interesting.
Have you, speaking of next year's game, I don't want to jump ahead too far, but it is, this is a little bit interesting because this will be kind of the first off season with Musselman where you think there's the potential to bring back a lot of key pieces from the current team. Last year's team was filled with seniors and even trying to get Rashawn Ainge back to the team was a weird situation where I'm sure he ultimately made the correct decision going down to Texas because he had to actually get an injunction in place from a judge, and the local judge here in California where it was not handing out those injunctions. You could, that's all the applications in Los Angeles were denied, but in most of the country they were granted. In Texas they were, so he got an extra year doing that. But other than him, the only guys that were really, on the slated to come back were a couple of the freshmen who transferred down to smaller programs. And then obviously the two guys ended up moving up to Washington. But everybody else on the team was seniors. This time around, you have a lot of key pieces on the team that are actually underclassmen, like Jacob Kofi and Marian Dickerson, who's probably maybe would have been out of eligibility. He has the whole JUCO thing, which is weird, but since he didn't play this year, I think he's eligible for a red shirt. Rodney Rice is coming back. He should be back in college basketball at least. And then you have guys like Jerry Easter and then Gabe Dines and whatnot. So have you gotten any hint of from the staff is like, hey, it's going to be a priority for us to try to bring as many of these guys back, Jordan Marsh, bring as many of these guys back as we possibly can as a foundation for next year to kind of match, the twins that they've signed, the Ratliff twins, and try to put their best foot forward for next season.
I haven't gotten any sense of that from the staff, if only because I've given up on asking about future portal entrance plans months ahead. I feel like it's sort of a futile task at this point because so often plans change, whatever, given how these next couple months go. But that said, I do know that certainly I think they're going to be pleased to actually have a couple returners for like the first time since taking over. And just having that, I mean, opens up so much more flexibility in terms of, what they can do with the rest of the roster. Now, what is interesting, and I don't so much know USC's exact situation and in these circumstances, but the rest of college basketball, just sort of coming into this next season after having really overpaid in the previous transfer market, just because of the date with, the start of rev share, like it's going to be a mess coming into this portal window. And I know that's certainly something that USC is conscious of, but it could really change the market. And I think, you might see a lot. A very different sort of window with the portal coming up. And I'll be curious to see how USC approaches that, but there's so many unknowns. I mean, we don't even know for sure if Rodney Rice will return. You kind of expect that he will, but you can really talk yourself into a lot of combinations with a lineup and then add a couple difference makers, and you could see USC become a really good team really fast next season.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of these, and this just doesn't apply to USC, but multiple schools. I know some, obviously last year in that transfer portal window, some really big dollars went out the door. But I think the idea at the time was, because this was happening right before the House settlement was signed, to try to get these players locked in for multi-year deals. And I know that's for sure the case with Yates up in Washington. I'm assuming it's the case with Ronnie Rice. I don't know for sure, but I mean, the numbers that I heard bandied about for how much was paid for Ronnie Rice, you kind of have to think, okay, that can't be a 1 year deal. That's got to be a multiple year deal, especially since it was so much more than, like, for example, we was spent on like Chad Baker-Mazzara, or what was being offered to Desmond Claude. So you think that these are multi-year deals? It's hard to know. I think it'd be really good for the sport of college basketball if this was actually led, if somehow you could actually get this to a place where NIL or whatever it was, actually was used to retain rosters and keep guys around rather than using it to just go like scramble everything after the end of last season, at the end of the season. So it could be a really interesting tool, especially since it's already had the effect of keeping a lot more talent going to college, right? I mean, this has got to be like the most talented year for college basketball overall, not like single players, but like overall as a package since like Kobe Bryant and Kevin Garnett were leaving out of high school, going straight from high school to the NBA. Just because if you just look at the players that you're not only are you're getting like all the best players that didn't get drafted to the top 40 or stay in college, but they're all these guys are coming over from Europe. And they're like the best players from there are playing there in college basketball too. So I mean the talent level seems to have gone way up. Now it's like the question is, can this somehow be used to, maintain roster integrity, which I think would really help the sport overall and get fans much more engaged during the regular season.
Yeah, it's definitely the sport is definitely a lot more stacked. It helps when you guys have you have some players on your team that are what 25 or
Yes,
maybe
exactly.
even 26 in some cases. But yeah, in Rodney Rice's case, I know you mentioned it. My understanding is that it's a multi-year deal. But that said, it's always I don't even know really what is going to hold up in court these days. I mean, I know that's certainly. A huge topic of conversation when it comes to football right now. Darian Mentz's situation at Duke. He's Miami's trying to poach him. Damon Williams at Washington.
Duke went in for a TRO to block it, and it was denied yesterday. And meanwhile, yeah, Washington, they were able to basically scare the bejesus out of him to make him come back and not get poached by LSU.
So it's hard to know where legally all that will stand. I don't want to make any promises of what a roster will look like, but yeah, I expect that Rodney Rice, will be around and he would look pretty good paired with Elijah Arenas in the second season if that actually worked out that way. But I don't know that they are sitting here thinking we have to have Elijah back. Because they've always been planning for him to be a one and done.
Well, let's talk a little football stuff. There's so many things going on in the football program, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on a lot of this stuff. Especially as the football program in many ways has kind of even become even more secretive, kind of like I think we've talked about this on other podcasts where you're kind of used to the basketball team being more secretive, but MUS is a little more open. And football programs, Lincoln Riley seems to be pretty secretive. Have you kind of gotten wind with like how many like do you understand like what the process was for selecting defensive coordinator? Like how many people Lincoln Riley was willing to talk to, wanted to talk to? Did he just want Gary Patterson all along, and he was like, I'm not going to really, I'll do these other interviews, and this is just kind of like who I want. Or have you gotten any sense of that at all?
I haven't really got a clear sense of the process in so much as to say like how many candidates were interviewed, exactly where they were looking. I know, or like, it's hard to say sometimes like how much interest there were in certain candidates that there was at least a little interest in. So, there were certainly conversations with guys like Pete Kwiatkowski, who had just left Texas, and conversations about candidates in the NFL, and I think really, and I know Lincoln kind of made clear or tried to make clear after the bowl game that just how great of a job this is, how he's already fielded a bunch of calls from people who are interested. I think that might be a little bit of an exaggeration. That's not to say that this isn't a good job, but I think the circumstances are a little tough for someone coming from the outside, if only for the fact that, everyone knows that Lincoln Riley is under pressure to win. Whether we can say for sure he's on the hot seat this coming year or whether it be another year after that. People from the outside can see that there is, unhappiness among fans about where the program stands. And people factor that in when they're thinking about, where they want to take their career. So you think about, hotshot DCs, like let's say if they wanted to try to poach Indiana's DC or something like that. I don't know that they try to make that call, but just as a hypothetical, that is going to be, why would he take that risk, other than maybe an insane paycheck?
Yeah.
But, maybe some coach like, say, Gary Patterson, who's just been a consultant on staffs, who already has a statue of him in Fort Worth. He's not really trying to prove anything at this point other than to continue his coaching career. Like, that's not as much of a concern for him. He also knows Lincoln Riley from their time coaching in the Big 12 together. They had a good relationship as far as I've heard. And I do think, there is something to the fact that I think a lot of DCs now, especially in a situation like they'd be stepping into, would hope that they would be able to bring a lot of their own assistants. And I know the hope at USC was that they wanted to keep a lot of of their defensive assistants. Eric Henderson and Trevon Reed, the cornerbacks coach. So Sean Nua. So they tried, they tried to retain these guys. And also, another part of that is that all of these guys have pretty significant buyouts as part of the contracts that they had negotiated. So, all of that to say that when you look at a guy like Gary Patterson, that certainly is in more of the Lincoln Riley camp of candidate in that he kind of fit all of those circumstances. And that's not to say like he's a subpar candidate or anything. He's a Hall of Famer. Now he was just inducted or will be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. Had the number one total defense, I think 5 years of his 21 coaching TCU, at a school that you don't often see that in the conference, you don't often see that. So his scheme works. And I think he feels like a natural fit with Lincoln. Now whether that is a natural fit with the roster, I don't know yet. I haven't really dove that deep, but certainly it seems like as of now, we're just kind of waiting on the terms of that to be finalized. And, the move to not renew Doug Belk's contract as secondary coach certainly is kind of, setting the table for, another hire to come here in the next couple of days, I would assume.
I had tried to do as quick of a dive into Gary Patterson as possible once his name was being floated, and because he does coach, a lot. There's been talk, well, he coaches his 4-2-5, and is that going to work in the Big Ten? The reality is, most, not all, but most programs these days run some variety of the 4-2-5 offense, just because it's like to counter the spread offenses that's become, predominant college football. Indiana kind of runs a hybrid where they will sometimes run a 7-man front, sometimes run the 6-man front. But Gary Patterson's version of the 4-2-5 is a little bit different, and it is particularly different as it applies to how he uses his safeties. So it's not a huge shock to me that Belk isn't coming back, except my understanding is that Patterson will not be looking to bring in his own guys, which is not a huge shock, because if you look, a lot of those, there's not, most of those guys are otherwise employed or they're out of coaching, the guys that he last coached with at TCU. And since this is a little bit of a different wrinkle, you would have thought maybe Belk would have been curious about this and said, oh, okay, I'll try this version of the 4-2-5 out, where the safety plays a little. I mean, the safety play is very important, and for the funny part is actually more important in the Gary Patterson's version of the 4-2-5 than in kind of your standard forms, because rather than using just a third cornerback and calling them a nickelback, he really has three separate safeties on the field, and a couple of those safeties are almost hybrid have almost like hybrid linebacker roles, even though they're still safety size. So it's a really important position. And the reporting is, and I don't know if this is true, that Bell could have come back, but he kind of just didn't want to commit earlier in the process and kind of waited that out. And they just eventually decided that they weren't going to renew. I don't know if that's true or not, but it does seem to me like, oh, okay, well, that would have been an interesting combination. And maybe now that Gary Patterson will just coach the safeties himself, that maybe that will be the final decision on that. But this whole circumstance with Gary Patterson was did kind of come out of nowhere. But I do have to say, from my standpoint, I made a and this is pretty rough, but I made a critique after that bowl, Alamo Bowl game that, it really seems like other than coaching the offense, there's a lot of aspect. And by the way, Ryan, since you have to deal with Lincoln Riley's staff more, you don't have to respond to this so directly. But there seems to be a lot of aspects of being a head coach. I mean, I used to be a head coach of a football team, and there's a lot of different hats you're wearing. And one of the hats is you're kind of the head coach of the offense, and Lincoln Riley does a really good job at that. And all the other hats, I'm not sure how good of a job he does at these. And having a guy like Gary Patterson come in there, I mean, it's one thing to just be the defense coordinator and you're kind of running the defense on game days and stuff like that. But I mean, it might even be helpful to have like a guy that's kind of almost like doing their own thing on the where the all the defensive personnel, where they're almost like doing different even drills, calisthenics, everything, just to because the de what the defenses that Lincoln Riley has had just haven't really been very good. And even though the they haven't matched the personnel that he's been able to bring in at different times. And maybe just having a guy with the kind of like the experience and gravitas and just being used to being like a real head coach like Patterson, that might be what he Lincoln Riley really needs.
Yeah, and you can certainly see how that would work with Patterson being more of like a CEO of the defense type. So yeah, it makes sense as a combination to me. And it, if you're Lincoln Riley, it has to work. So you can go, there are certainly worse directions to go than hiring a guy who was just, voted into the Hall of Fame. So I know some USC fans are disappointed by that. I don't really understand why, personally. I think some people are just sort of looking to be disappointed about anything. But a lot of these, again, the top of the top defensive coordinator candidates, that the circumstances just aren't as such that it would make sense for them to come to USC. So for this sort of situation, I think Gary Patterson just makes a lot of sense.
I guess maybe the less big topic I was going to talk to you about is just what's going on with in college football with NIL and then the transfer portal and USC, kind of famously, we're going to minor in the transfer portal, major in high school recruiting. There were some a few really key transfer portal additions, but then there was like some decisions that were kind of just came out of nowhere. It didn't like it doesn't it didn't fully make sense, I think, to a lot of people, like how we approached linebacker position, the transfer portal, because that seemed to be a very position of weakness from this past season. And we brought in one guy from Washington who had kind of lost his starting spot, was still in the rotation, but we did not aggressively pursue that position, even though there were a lot of potential linebackers out there. We brought in one wide receiver, which is, I think a high quality guy from NC State, but it's not like, necessarily would satisfy all the guys we've lost from that room. Obviously a lot of freshmen are coming in. We didn't bring in a center. We didn't bring in any offensive linemen. Now, granted, we, Nua came back, which was a surprise. And we have, big freshman class coming in, and everybody else was kind of returning. But, we had a walk-on basically starting at center, and it's not clear that a walk-on won't be starting next year at center. So I'm not sure how many questions you've gotten about the transfer portal and our approach to it, but, do you, Do you kind of feel like this was the plan all along from Chad Bowden to, we're not really going to try to bring in 12 or 11, 12 guys. We're not going to necessarily address every issue. We're not going to bring in another safety, a starting level safety like we've done in the past. We're going to target a few different positions. And then I guess just let it ride with kind of who we got and who we got, coming in from the freshman class. And do you think part of that decision is based upon the way the house settlement works, where revenue sharing is becoming more important, at least in the interim, than NIL dollars, and we're kind of afraid to just kind of so freely spend NIL dollars like we had done last year before the house settlement?
Well, I think it's a kind of a combination of all of those things. But to start with the transfer class, yeah, Chad Bowden did say exactly what they were going to do, and they did it. So, they wanted to, they brought in, 35 guys in the recruiting class, and then, not nearly as many as they have in the past in the transfer portal. And now, I guess they are really trusting their evaluation when it comes to some of those guys. And I agree with you on the linebacker position. I do think like there were a lot of seemingly impact linebackers in the portal that I thought USC probably could have had a better shot at than they ultimately did. Now we'll see about Bryant. Maybe he is a great fit for what USC has and what USC added on the interior. They brought in Alex Van Sumeren or Sumeren from Michigan State. He had a great game against USC, especially, and it seems like he'll be, an entrenched member of that rotation. But I agree in that I think they could have probably brought in more reinforcements, but I don't know that that's necessarily like NIL rev share limitations situation. I think that is more of just like a, I mean, that is always going to be a part of the equation, but it's more just like a roster construction, future planning sort of situation. I do think it's important to note that like Chad Bowden and the way that he helps construct this roster is not necessarily always with the same trajectory, like thinking with the same trajectory as Lincoln Riley's situation, right? He's not going to get fired if Lincoln Riley gets fired. So that's always kind of an interesting interplay in terms of the timelines for how a roster is built. Of course, I'm not, that's not saying that they, aren't in concert right now with their ideas, but certainly will be interesting this year, just given how it seems like they could have brought in maybe a linebacker, maybe an interior offensive lineman. But if we're being honest, they haven't been very good at finding those, those positions in the transfer portal. So maybe they've just decided certainly to trust the guys that they're bringing in as freshmen. And that is kind of a bold strategy to try to trust a lot of freshmen. But that said, we'll just have to see these guys on the field to really know one way or the other.
The other thing I really wonder about is if some of a couple of the guys that we've lost more recently, I wonder if Patterson had been involved more early, or earlier, he would have said, "Don't let that guy go." And the one I'm really thinking about is Mathai Tagoe. I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing his last name properly. Fairly well recruited prospect at linebacker out of San Clemente, but I mean, he looked like even on the recruiting trips he took, like to Clemson. I mean, he looks like he's still well under 200 pounds. I mean, like he looked like he's under 190 pounds, and he's like six whatever, 6'2", 6'3", tall guy, but does not have a seem to have a thick frame. Does not, to me, he doesn't look like he's built like a linebacker, but he very well could have been built like one of these safeties in the Gary Patterson system. So I'm wondering, like, gosh, if he had still been on the team, would be we be looking to move him to one of those safety spots that Patterson uses? And how much was there any discussion about this ahead of time? with Patterson, I have a feeling not. I don't think that probably the kind of discussions went in that direction. I could be wrong about that, but I don't. I kind of question whether or not how much person the topic of personnel was discussed with Patterson before some of these decisions were made. So yeah, I'm just curious about, there was another podcast I was listening to where guy was having, this is like a week ago, he's having lunch with Gary Patterson, and the guy mentioned, man, if you take that USC job, if the schedule's brutal next year, he goes, well, let's pull it up right now and look at it. Like, I don't think Patterson hadn't looked at the schedule. So yeah, some of these things I makes me wonder, maybe he was being, sly like a fox and he knew the schedule well, but it's just hard to tell, and I don't know if, I do wonder if like everybody's on the same page with them. I mean, is it just Chad Bowden, or is all the defensive guys, the position coaches on board, and is Lincoln Riley on board, and then ultimately will Gary Patterson be on board? Because even though we haven't lost as many guys this cycle, we did lose 20 guys to the portal, and some of them might be pretty decent. So I am curious to see how that all works out. Do you, I guess, last question. Have you got any discussion about what the expectations were? I know Chad Bowden had very, I just personally know this, had very kind of muted expectations for this past season. I think we actually exceeded even what his expectations were. But, next season looks like a little bit different animal. Obviously, the schedule's a bear, but, when you're now in a situation where you're coming off a semi, until we get to the bowl game, semi-successful season, and you have the quarterbacks returning. He had a successful season. You essentially have the entire offensive line returning. You have the backfield returning. You need new receivers, but you brought in a key guy from the portal. A lot of key defensive players are returning, and then you bring in all these freshmen. Do you have any sense of what the expectations are for next season?
All of the messaging has been sort of, pushing towards one thing, and that's making the playoff. And I think at this point, we have to take them at their word with that. So I think we've been, at least I feel like I have been pretty reasonable in my expectations the last couple of years in terms of the trajectory of where this roster and the program is headed. But once you get into a fifth year, there really aren't any excuses left. And and just talking to people, within the athletic department around the program, that's kind of where this is all going. I mean, you just have to look at the marketing of everything. Like, it's all talking about like the culmination, like this next year, and the number one recruiting class and the new defensive coordinator, and all of this is pushing towards, well, we need to see these results right now, and our expectations are playoff. Now, I can't say for sure if without a playoff appearance that, Lincoln Riley wouldn't be safe, but I know that the expectation now is that, we know that the schedule is tough, but look, now you're not even playing Notre Dame. So there are no excuses about the schedule being hard. You just need to make the playoff, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, they would have. I have to say, I think if Notre Dame was still on the schedule, they would have played like four of the six top projected teams into going into next season. Now they're only playing three. So that makes it a little bit easier. Okay. Well, I think that's all I got for you, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Course.
Any predictions on tonight's game against Northwestern?
I just have no idea what to expect out of this team with Elijah Arenas. I or really honestly before he came back, I didn't really know what to expect out of this team on a night by night basis. So, I'm gonna I'll take a stab and say that he has a big night tonight and really shows why people were excited about him. I think they're gonna give him, ample room to do that.
I would not be surprised. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and go on a limb and project that he's going to start, predict he's going to start, and that he's going to play 32 minutes.
Oh, okay.
I just, the way Musselman does things, I mean, he doesn't tend to do things half-assed. So I have a feeling that Musselman's going to say, you know what, he's ready to go. We're going to start him and we're going to play him. I could be totally wrong. For all I
I
know,
think
he's,
we'll see him start for sure.
yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. And hopefully we'll, we'll maybe soon we'll have you back on.
Of course, anytime.
All right, thanks a lot.